Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to mintplus.ie. Good as new pre-owned smartphones and iPhones.
This is News Talk.
Welcome to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, I'll chat to the co-founder of ConverCon and hear how chatbots and smart assistants have transformed customer service. Virgin Media will explain how they're going to smarten the home for their customers without breaking the bank. Plus, WageDream has arrived into Ireland. We'll find out what it is and how it'll help you ditch your credit card. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. But first, on October 17th, ConverCon will take place in the Lighthouse in Smithfield, Dublin. This conference will bring together the biggest players from the world of conversation interfaces to look at how technology can continue to transform the user experience. I'm joined now by Paul Sweeney, co-founder of ConverCon, who also works at Webio. Paul, welcome to Tech Talk. Just briefly remind us, what exactly does Webio do?
Webio are a conversation middleware company. We help very large companies kind of gather their resources, like their people, process, and other digital kind of technologies together and enable you to deliver customer service over messengers primarily, but also over SMS and voice interfaces. So if you were, let's say you were the a very big retailer in the UK, and you want to reach out to your customers over WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, etc., you have to connect that to your CRM systems, payment systems, booking systems, etc., etc. So we help you keep all that flowing as one conversation and connect it all up for you so that you can deliver that as a fluent conversation to your own customers.
So a lot of this, you know, there's a lot of terminology associated with this. But in terms of me, the consumer, how do I get the benefit of what it is that you do?
Well, if you can imagine, if you've ever bought something online, you might go and say, hey, at Argos, or hey, at Shop Direct, or hey, at Littlewoods, right? So you raise it up on your Messenger or WhatsApp, and you go, I'd like to return that thing I bought. And if you can imagine, from there, it understood, it's Paul Sweeney. The last thing they bought was this pair of sneakers. It was size 11. He wants to return them. He lives here. It understood all that. And I went, just replied, no problem. Would 3 o'clock today be okay for a pickup time? And I went, yeah.
So I suppose it's bringing the more conversational nature, because up until not that long ago, I suppose if you had a problem with a company or if something wasn't right or if you got the wrong order, you would either go back to the store and exchange it, or you would call and press 7 for help and press 3 to, you know, lose the will to live because it's soul destroying. This is, I suppose, making it easier for the consumer to interact with big brands. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And whether that brand is your bank, your retailer, your utility, it kind of doesn't matter because we all live in our messaging apps. So that's where we want to communicate from. That's it. I mean, that's where we all are. We spend our days in our messengers.
I was in, I can't remember if it was at Web Summit a few years ago in Lisbon, and I got to sit down with the head of, or the guy who runs Facebook Messenger, and he was predicting that this was going to happen, you know, and it was still sort of early doors in terms of brands using it, but it was that very thing of, you know, if you want to buy something from Tommy Hilfiger, you would go on to Facebook Messenger, talk to Tommy Hilfiger and find out if they have your size in a particular store, and you get instantaneous feedback. Are all brands engaging in this, and are all industries engaging in this, and are there some where it just doesn't work?
Well, I'd say there's not only industries where it doesn't work, there's processes where it doesn't work, and there's ways of using it that doesn't work. So it's you're not going to go and try and find a brand you don't know, for instance, and go, oh, you know, Wachitashi Industries, you know, I'd love to buy your new fridge. Like, you're just not going to do that. So if you can think about it as exactly the case that the person outlined to you, is you're already interacting with a company through, you've already engaged with them, or you were on Facebook perhaps and you saw some advertising and you went, oh, that's interesting. And you clicked through that's a different kind of marketing path. Mm-hmm. The much more successful implementation has been in customer service. So while you can publish advertising onto the Facebook platform and go, like, are you interested in summer tents? Go camping, you know, explore the world of tents, click into the messenger to find out more, and you're in a one-to-one conversation with a business, you could do that, but it's actually much more efficient to go, that tent I bought from you, it came without the pegs.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, sorry, Paul, we'll send it out to you immediately. And so it's just much more intuitive in the customer service area.
Is there a fear factor, though, of the loss of personalization? Because there are some brands who pride themselves on that personal touch, and they want to know your name, and they'll know I don't mean in terms of just knowing that I'm Jess Kelly, I'm 30, I live in wherever I live. Mm. It's that thing of, oh, the last time you were here, you didn't like this one, so let's go back to the one that you did like. Or you know, it's just the old school personal sales touch, I suppose.
If you think about it, I mean, this is an old adage of Intercom, right? It's that you should be able to go to a retailer and it act like your local coffee shop. It understands that you like black coffee, you don't want milk, and you sometimes like a bagel with it. And so if you don't have the systems to personalize it programmatically, like, you know, use technology to get that kind of personalization, then what you're looking to do is just make sure that you connect your customers to the right people in your business. So, if Paul Sweeney is connected to a particular company, and there's, like, we don't have systems for figuring out what Paul's last purchase was, what his next like is going to be for the thing to have with his coffee, then just put it into a person. Just say, look, we'd like to connect you with Jess. She's going to be another 5 minutes, or she'll be back to you in 5 minutes, or just leave it there and go, we'll be back to you in a minute. And then say, like, hey, it's Jess here. I looked up your last purchase, and last time you bought coffee, you also bought bagels. Would you like me to, there's some lovely bagels from Japan in, would you like me to send you a sample? And you go, oh, that'd be great. So,
but how do you balance that, right? So that sounds lovely, and it is personalized, and that is answering my first question, but I'm going to keep going at this now and throw another one at you. Where is the line, and do we know the comfort level of consumers? Because obviously different consumers have different levels of digital literacy. So one customer, like me, for example, I'd be delighted if you knew everything about me and I didn't have to make a decision. You just do what I want without me having to say it. However, other consumers would find that kind of creepy. So how do brands, and how do you facilitate brands to sort of dance that line, so that the more, I suppose, conservative digital customer doesn't feel utterly creeped out?
So I've got a couple of, it's actually a bigger question than that. It's like the uncanny valley of everything, right? The uncanny valley of technology is that, like, how does it know it was me? It's like, it shouldn't know me, and I'm going to put down the phone. Mm-hmm. That is a reaction you could get. But typically, they're not the people who jump onto your web chat or your messenger. Like, they're not going to generally have that reaction.
Okay, so this is for digitally savvy people. Like, you kind of know what really you're getting into.
Not really. I mean, if you... well, I can tell you that typically we just never have that problem. That's the first thing I'll tell you. Like, we never have the problem that someone's kind of freaked out by the fact that you know their name or that you knew the last thing they bought. It just kind of doesn't happen. But if you are worried about that kind of an effect, what you do is you just ask your questions more carefully. So in your conversation design, you would say something like, hey, Paul, we know from... can you just confirm that your last purchase was a pair of Nikes? And I go, yes, it was. Great. So you are Paul Sweeney. Yeah. Now, you might know that already, but you just do that one interaction just to give the customer the feeling that you've looked something up, you've confirmed that you know who they are, and now I know who you are, we can continue. Mm. And everything you know after that, it's like, oh, but I'm already kind of logged in. I kind of already know what I'm, you know, they know me, I know them from here on in.
Yeah.
So just some careful conversation design can go a long way, which is why we spend a lot of time at ConvertCon as much on conversation design as we do on the technology.
Yeah.
Because how How you ask for things is important.
Well, that's what I was going to come to next, is because I was lucky enough to go to the Microsoft campus in Seattle earlier this year, and I met the team that curate and create the conversations that you can have with Cortana, their smart assistant. And they spend a whole lot of time deciding what words and what phrases Cortana will and won't use, because it is very important that it's a conversational tone rather than this robotic thing talking to you. Let's talk about the interaction with these different types of services through voice, because that is where we're going. Things like Cortana, things like Amazon's Alexa, things like Siri, they are more and more in our homes. I think that when they first came around, a lot of people raised their eyebrows and thought, I'm not going to be talking to a piece of technology. But it is the most natural way to communicate. Are we seeing brands investing in the voice interaction space as well?
We are. And it's I think the question about, like, will we be using voice is kind of over. Like, we will be using voice. The next thing is, will we be using these smart speakers? And we're going to go, yeah, we will, but it's kind of just the first product in that area. So if you've got the assistant embedded in your television set, or it's embedded into your home management systems, or even your Wi-Fi, and you can speak to the objects in your house, then you're perfectly comfortable doing that, it would seem, these days. What I would just say about the voice is, the speaker is like an early example of what will be in your house, but the assistant will be embedded into a whole range of things in your house and may actually disappear as an object altogether. It's what they call the invisible interface. The other thing I would say about it is, the one that gets the attention is, oh, buy me a new, a Hoover, or I'd like to replace my washing towels or whatever. But the actual one that's the killer app that's already happened is, play me my Spotify, play me my radio. And that shift has already happened. We are listening to our auditory services over these speakers. And as the quality of the speaker got better, as the instructions became easier to use and understand, and as, frankly, they became more native, like, I didn't have to do anything, I just ask Alexa, play BBC Radio 4, and it does it. Then when I do that, it's like, oh, that's great. That's a really useful thing. And when you go to the older audiences, I have cause for speaking with a lot of people in senior roles, and they're typically, say, around 45 to 50, and their parents are still alive often. And what they're finding is that their parents, who never really got the smartphone thing, they got the text, but that's about it, they really like the smart speakers in their house now. And primarily because they can initially play music, get the radio, and then they figure out, oh, I can ask it some questions too. Oh, I can ask it about the bus, or I can ask it about transport. And that's been, we tend to, like, look at technologies from, are the 14-year-olds using it, because they're the early adopters. But a lot of the adoption is also happening in the older demographics. So that kind of, that idea of who's using it and what are they using it for is really broad spectrum. But the main thing, the breakout use case in voice has been for music and auditory around the house.
And I do feel contractually obliged at this point to say that you can ask your Alexa or your Google Home to play News Talk, and it will do so for you as well, just in case I get fired for not saying that. But continue with your point.
So I think the kind of the more, again, the more interesting thing that's happening is that when you look at the voice interfaces, what you're really seeing is that when they join with other platforms, the power of it kind of multiplies. So Amazon, if you look at Amazon Prime members, half of Amazon Prime members have a smart speaker in their house. So when you combine the two services, you get something really powerful, like, hey, now I want to, can you, resend me those paper towels, or those batteries, or put that on my list and have it sent on Friday. You can issue your instruction over voice, but then the platform, the delivery platform, takes that and then delivers it to you. So it's this combination of things that is the transformative aspect of it. So that's why you're seeing platforms like Shopify building their own delivery networks, because they're saying, oh, if you're a store, you've got your stock on Shopify as a platform, now you can ask Shopify to deliver it just like you would on Amazon, except it's thousands of independent retailers on that network. So the combination of voice and then AI and then other organization kind of capabilities together kind of give you this ask for something and it's done, ask for an appointment and it's made, and everything that you need around that is also done. So, you know, the booking, the payment, the confirmation, all that cycle's all managed. And I'm a terrible traveler. Like, I genuinely am an awful traveler. I'm nervous about everything, missing my gates, going the wrong way, going to the wrong plane. And so when I get on my messenger and it says, you know, leave now to get to the airport, you're still at Terminal 2, your gate is still Gate 33, it'll take you half an hour to get from here to that gate. All that kind of information I get, it's like having an assistant with you, and it's helping you kind of manage your actions, but it's also helping manage your anxiety, your mood, your feeling of being looked after in a place. And so it's, again, not always just about, did I buy my ticket through this? It's like it accompanies you on the journey that you're on, no matter what stage you're on, from initial inquiry to I've already bought something and now I'm paying for it or I'm getting delivery of it. Mm-hmm. Can I manage that cycle through voice, through messengers, through SMS, all as one kind of channel, one conversation? And that's actually why Microsoft call it the conversation is the platform.
Yeah.
That's what they said.
It's an absolutely fascinating area, and it's one that I think we are going to hear more and more about as time goes by. But the ConvertCon is taking place on October 17th. Tell me briefly what it's all about.
Well, we think that Dublin is actually an ideal place to have this because it's where we get the platform companies like Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Oracle in one room. We get vendors that rely on those platforms like Intercom, Webio, Swerve, Soapbox Labs, etc. Digital companies like Accenture, which is one of the biggest design labs in Europe, is based in Dublin. And then we get the end user companies. We get them all in one room and we say, look, for this stuff to really work, like, what's not working? What did you do? What's best practice here? What can we learn from each other so that this stuff works? And that's all, you'd be surprised, was not being commonly shared until ConvertCon. And then on the other side, if all this stuff works, like if we're going to interact with the world over messaging and voice first interfaces and it's all AI driven, what changes? Like, what do we need to keep our eye on for the future if this big dramatic shift happens? And how does that change the way we need to do business in the future? And not just business, but provide services. This year, we're bringing in a big emphasis on healthcare, and not just as an industry, but as a social good. Like, how can we take better care of people? How can we give people more freedom, more sense of kind of control when you're in a maybe an elder person's care facility or in a hospital, or maybe you want to manage a condition at a distance? How can we use these technologies to make life better for people who are unwell? And I think we lose sight of the fact that technology can do some good. And
it can. We need to remember that every now and then. It's nice to remember that it's not just scary stuff that's creeping on us. There is a lot of good out there. The event is called ConvertCon. It's taking place on October 17th. You can find more information online. But for the moment, co-founder of that event, Paul Sweeney, thank you so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Coming up next, we'll hear from Virgin Media about their new smart home offering.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. So we all know Virgin Media by now. They arrived into Ireland a little while ago and have put their branding on some existing brands, but are continuing to expand their portfolio when it comes to communications, be that mobile, broadband and home. Just this week, they launched a new offering for existing customers and new customers. And I'm joined by Karen Faulkner of Virgin Media to tell me more. Karen, what did you launch?
Thanks, Jess. I'm delighted to tell your listeners that today we are launching the Virgin Media Smart Home proposition. This is a range of three smart home packs available to our broadband customers, each including a full in-home setup by a Virgin Media technician. The packs start from as little as €15 per month and they can be paid off over 12 months. And at that time, then customers own the kit themselves fully.
So what exactly is in the kit?
So we've partnered with Google for this launch, and our packs include smart devices like the Nest Hello doorbell, Google Home speaker, TP-Link smart plugs. And as I mentioned, all of these packages come with a full Virgin Media in-home setup.
And so why are you guys deciding to do this now? What has been the sort of the driver for it?
So the reason we're launching this now is we know from research that over 60% of Irish consumers want to make their home smarter, but a lot of them just don't know where to begin. What's stopping them are things like cost, number one. It can be a big upfront outlay to buy these devices outright. Two, setup. So even those that are very tech savvy and are used to setting up devices like these in home, it can be quite time consuming as well. And thirdly, the quality of your Wi-Fi, being sure that your Wi-Fi will work to enable each one of these devices seamlessly is a big concern. So we believe that the Virgin Media Smart Home package resolves those problems for customers and really helps them take that first step into a smarter home.
And how did you go about deciding what bits go into these packages? Because I know from my day job, there are so many different options out there when it comes to smart assistants, the different types of doorbell, the different types of plugs and so on. How did you pick and choose what goes into the different packs?
Absolutely. Well, firstly, we did quite a lot of research over the past 18 months and we spoke to consumers about their needs. We then researched the individual devices and we worked with a number of different partners and we ultimately shortlisted Google as our primary partner. But we picked the devices specifically that customers were in the market for over the next 12 months. And that really, you know, are the devices that will help them take that first step to automating their home.
So if people want to, you know, get involved or opt in, what do they need to do? And what's the timeline to get it done and into the home?
Absolutely. So this proposition is available for all Virgin Media broadband customers, new and existing. The packages, as I mentioned, start from €15 per month and you can purchase them online at virginmedia.ie/smarthome, or you can call into any of our retail channels. And in terms of the timeline for setup, so we average roughly a 2 to 3 day turnaround for our technicians to be out in your home and setting up the devices. Again, it's at the behest of the customer. They can preset timeframes, but it's roughly a 2 to 3 day turnaround for that setup.
Do you think that the nature of the Virgin Media offering is going to continue to change over time? Because we know now that you have the Virgin Media broadband, the TV, the mobile, it's all kind of changing. Do you think that offering is going to continue to evolve?
Absolutely. We're always looking to the future to see, you know, what is going to best fit for our customers. We have Ireland's fastest broadband network and it is a natural next step for us to evolve that into smart technology, especially because we have our own dedicated technicians in home anyway. And there's an appetite in the market for a proposition like this. So it's definitely something that we're constantly looking to evolve. And this is a natural next step for us.
If people are concerned, because again, I know from talking on the Pat Kenny show about the different smart assistants and so on, about the security side of things and so on, just give me a bit of an overview.
Absolutely.
About, you know, how you've gone about picking the different partners and the security that comes with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Security and data protection are top priority for Virgin Media. So we have rigorously tested the products that we're planning to launch and we're very happy with the devices that we're offering. Any concerns that customers would have, they can contact us directly on our website or at our contact centre. But we're very comfortable that, you know, through the partnership we have with Google, we've worked through any of those privacy concerns, and we're happy that we've picked a partner that we can trust and our customers can trust. You know, this proposition is first to market from a broadband perspective for customers in the market. They can make savings of up to 20% of the recommended retail price by taking one of these packages. It will include a free installation and customers can pay the devices off monthly. So as I said, it really is that first step for helping customers take that first step into the smarter home.
Amazing stuff. Karen, thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thanks, Jess.
That was Karen Faulkner of Virgin Media. On Wednesday of this week, I popped out to the National Council for the Blind Ireland to meet with June Tinsley, who told me about a new trial that's taking place this weekend.
June Tinsley, Head of Communications with NCBI.
So June, I know that a lot is being done in terms of technology and accessibility. And one area that I know you guys are working with at the moment is when it comes to the cinema. So there's the new EarCatch app, which I know is being trialled today for the first time in the cinema in Dundrum, Movies at Dundrum. And explain to me how exactly it works. It's called EarCatch, correct?
Correct. And we're very excited about this because it does mean that attending movies is going to be more accessible for people who are blind and visually impaired. It basically provides an audio description of the movie, particularly the segments where there is no dialogue. So it provides an audio description of what's going on the screen so that those who are blind and visually impaired can follow the movie just like everybody else. Presently in Ireland, access to audio descriptions in movies is very, very limited. So this EarCatch app will open up new horizons to many people who want to go to the cinema and who are blind and visually impaired. So it's a great development, to be honest.
And so for those who are going along to the first of these trials, and it is running for a month, what is it that you do when you get to the cinema? What do you need to have and how does it work?
As you say, the trial is running for a month. It is only available for those who are going to go and see the Abominable movie. And it will be available across the country. People need to download the app onto their phone. They then need to download the audio description track through the EarCatch app. And then when they're in the cinema, they don't need any internet connection or anything. They just need to hit play on the app. And then a digital fingerprint is made of the ambient background sound. And then EarCatch knows exactly at what point in the movie you're in. And then the audio description will start playing for the individual who's blind and visually impaired through their headset on their phone. And then also on the app, there's a feature to kind of fade the screen so that it's not a distraction to anybody else around them when the brightness of a screen can distract other viewers of the movie.
That's brilliant, and it's such a clever idea, and we're seeing more and more of these innovations, as I said at the beginning there, that are coming in. What's been the feedback? So when you've told some of your members, for example, that this is coming down the tracks, what's been the initial feedback?
Total delight, to be honest, because presently in Ireland, attending the cinema when you're blind and visually impaired is very restrictive because audio description facilities aren't widespread. So it does literally open new opportunities for individuals to go back to the movies and enjoy that whole cinematic experience. Presently, this EarCatch app is available in Netherlands and Belgium for the last little while, and it's working very, very well for the people who are blind and visually impaired in those countries. So it's great that Ireland is trying to embrace this and promote it. Mm-hmm. So certainly for the next month, we'd encourage people to go and watch Abominable through using this EarCatch app and then provide feedback to us in order for then us to channel that back and improve the app again, which will then hopefully lead to all cinemas using it and rather all movies being able to be used and compatible with EarCatch.
So as I mentioned there, and I was chatting to Sinead Burke over the weekend, and she is a big ambassador for accessibility and inclusion in all aspects of life. But one thing that she's very big on is the image descriptions on apps like Instagram, for example, to ensure that those who may not be able to see certain colours and so on get the full picture of what it is she's wearing, who she's with and so on. How important is that in terms of inclusion and bringing everyone along with us as technology continues to develop?
Well, I suppose literally technology is revolutionising things for people who are blind and visually impaired because it makes things so much more accessible. There's so many different apps and softwares out there, many of them kind of activated through your voice, which can then ensure that people are included in so many walks of life. Including those alt description it's just a very minor step for people to take, and yet the impact can be really, really profound, because it means then that people who are blind and visually impaired using their smartphone, just like everybody else, can feel included and ensure that they are capturing the same message that's been sent out to everybody else. So I think it's a minor step, as I said, but the impact is really, really significant. And I suppose just in terms of technology overall, NCBI certainly is a strong advocate of trying to ensure that people are aware of the different features, both on their smartphone and on different pieces of technology, on how inclusive they can be. And our own assistive technology service is there to provide training to individuals to inform them on how to make their smartphone and other devices more more accessible to their needs.
And so if people want more information about the services that you offer, or indeed look for a bit of help, where can they go to get all that information?
I suppose our first port of call would be to our website, www.ncbi.ie, and we do have services right across the country, and many of our IT and assistive technology trainers would be available to support people in their own localities, as opposed to coming straight to Dublin. And I suppose it is an area that NCBI wants to be more of a pioneer in, to try and ensure that not only will people who are blind or visually impaired be more aware of the features and accessibility apps and software that are there, but also that people who are designing websites, for example, and that employers and different stakeholders are more mindful of the users being blind or visually impaired, and that how they can make their websites and all different technologies more accessible.
Brilliant stuff. Well, the website again is ncbi.ie. For the moment, June, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com. There are no shortage of fintech businesses out there. Some looking to help us do our daily transactions that bit easier. Others looking to help us get better with our money. And my next guest works for a company that does just that. Adam Hankin is the General Manager of WageStream Ireland, and he is with me now. Adam, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. So what exactly is WageStream Ireland?
So WageStream is an employee financial wellbeing benefit. It essentially gives employees access to their earned income whenever they need it, instead of going into things like payday loans or credit cards or overdraft when an unplanned expense occurs.
So explain, if I sign up, if Newstalk were to sign up to WageStream, how exactly it would work, and how would that avoid me needing to dip into the credit card?
Okay, so Newstalk would have to sign up first. And what they would do is they would offer it to all of the employees as an employee financial wellbeing benefit. The employee would download the app, and we would tie in with your payroll software, and we would actually be able to track in real time what you're earning. And you can see this in the app. So every day or every hour, you can actually see it going up. And if that unplanned expense comes up, you just go into the app and you select how much you need. Say it's 100 euros. You select that 100 euros and it will be in your account, worst case scenario, the following day. That will come directly out of your wages at the end of the month, and you'll start back fresh. So you never get yourself into a cycle of debt.
So you're essentially borrowing from yourself. You're not having to tap into the credit card or look for a loan or any of those other things that we just don't want to do. From a back end point of view, talk to me about the technology that's involved, because you just showed me the app there now and it looks very clean and very easy to use. So you mentioned there that you guys log into the employer's payroll system and so on. So what are all the cogs that are moving in the background?
So there's a couple of things. It varies per integration. Sometimes we just, if it's a salary file, we just can get the salary file and plug it in, and it's just a simple pro rata calculation. We do tech integrations with workforce management tools and time and attendance tools. So if you work in a shift environment and you clock out of your shift, it will push via API and actually update our app. So you've seen when you finished your shift exactly how much you've earned.
What protections are in place to ensure that the employer is protected so that an employee doesn't abuse the system? Is it a case that you can only access money that for hours that you have worked?
That's exactly the case. So you can only access a portion of what you've earned. So on day one of the month, you could only access up to 50% maximum of what you've actually earned. So you can never get yourself into future debt. You can't say, hey, I'm going to make 2,000 euros this month. I want 1,000 euros on day one, because that would be a loan, that would be a form of credit. We're not doing that. So it incentivizes people to work. In the shift work environment, if you haven't worked any shifts, it won't show up in the system. So you won't have access to any of it.
It's an interesting time because there's a lot of talk about the gig economy and there's a lot of talk about the changing nature of work. This seems to be sort of a forward-thinking access to that money, because if you are someone who is doing shift work, for example, or only working here and there, to be able to, you know, access that money without having to wait till the end of the month, I'm sure is beneficial. Have you done much research into that side of things?
So, yeah, we've actually spoken to a lot of gig economy employers, and, you know, the gig economy is a special case because these people are actually self-employed. And yet they don't have access to their earned income whenever they need it, which I thought would just be a given. So I know Uber in the US spent millions trying to create their own system where drivers could get paid whenever they want. But in Europe, in UK and Ireland, it just hasn't materialized yet. So these people in the gig economy are still only getting paid once a week, which I think is crazy.
It's crazy, and it also means that they can't plan to the same extent as those who are on payroll and, you know, just having access to money that they've earned. Is, you know, where do you see your product going? Is it a case that this could be the one-stop shop for those working in the gig economy so that they don't need to do the invoicing at the end of the week and that you guys would do the communication with the payroll? Or is it still just a bridge between the two?
It's kind of a bridge between the two. It's one of these lovely safety nets to have in the background. But what it really does is, you know, let's say I'm a gig economy worker and I want to go out on Friday night. You know, I could work the Thursday and get paid on the Friday if I wanted. And that's where it changes the mentality. So people can work an additional shift and actually pay themselves the following day. So that incrementality of, you know, work equals reward has suddenly been brought back to the fold, something that, you know, I wouldn't have seen since I was mowing lawns in the summer holidays, you know.
Yeah, getting the cash in hand. So has there been any form of, I suppose, hesitancy from the employer side of things, or do they see what you're trying to do? And again, it's not a case that the company is giving a loan to the employee, it's just giving them early access to a percentage of what is rightfully theirs.
So businesses are looking at well-being in the whole, but financial well-being has kind of been forgotten about. So the financial well-being aspects you can tack on are generally just one-to-ones with a financial advisor. You know, we're the first tangible solution that's come in play that actually stops people getting into debt from day one. So they're looking at this from that point of view. They're also very interested in seeing the gains that they can make from a retention and recruitment point of view, because if you speak to most businesses, what keeps them awake at night, it is recruitment and retention of staff. And this will dramatically help you in that area.
One aspect of the app that you just showed me there is the article section, where there is a bit of a health kick for your financial management. How have you gone about curating what's in there and what type of content is there?
So we ask questions of users what they'd like to know. Obviously, we've been able to copy what the UK have done in essence and see what were the most popular articles. So we've spoken with MABS, the Money Advice and Budgeting Service, and they're providing us independent financial education in the back end. So this will be around debt and borrowing, what to do if you're in debt, you know, what to do if you're in negative equity, all of these aspects of if you get in trouble, how to read your payslip, just general financial advice that's sat there in the back end that we can then actually start personalizing to the user based on their usage or non-usage of the app. So if I was a heavy user of WageStream 1 month, we'd probably send me budgeting advice and, you know, how to reduce your bills, where if you yourself didn't use it at all, we'd send you savings and pensions advice.
Okay, so even if I am the type of person that doesn't need it for, you know, covering my bills or whatever, is there still a use for me? Because surely you guys want people using this rather than getting us all so financially literate that we're not using it at all.
No, look, our main aim is to improve people's financial well-being, but we're trying to do it through three pillars. One is education. Another one, which I haven't mentioned yet, is savings. So we've set up a savings element where now you could set a set savings amount that you want to be diverted from your wages into a savings account. The reason why we're doing this, there's a horrible stat that we unfolded, which was 55% of employees cannot handle a 250 euro unplanned expense at the end of a pay cycle. Yeah, I know. It's an horrific thing. So we want everybody to have a rainy day fund of €250.
Mm-hmm. And it's, again, very, because you showed me how to do it there now, it's very easy. And what I like, it's sort of a habit that I've built in, is that the day I get paid, 200 quid goes instantly into my savings. So I don't even think about it. It just disappears. And it builds in that element of self-control.
Well, you're much better than I am. I didn't set up the direct debit, and I have every intention. I probably only do it two or three times out of the year. So this is the problem. We, you know, a lot of financial advice means that you have to go off and take action. You know, you have to cut down your spending. We all, and most of it is stuff that we already know. Mm. Whereas this, we make it really easy. You can actually, you just set a goal. Say you want to take the other half to a spa weekend. It's going to cost €400. You need to do it by May next year. It will automatically calculate how much you need to save per month. And then that will just be diverted out of your bank, out of your wages into your bank account.
And where did the idea come from?
There's a couple of aspects. I'd love to say I dreamt it up one night, but you know, it was actually in the US. Walmart actually got this developed. They looked at it. They wanted to address their customer, their employee retention. And they brought this about, and they pay fortnightly in the US. So we actually thought in the UK and Ireland, it would benefit that population a lot better because of the predominantly monthly pay cycle. So that's it. But look, the other part is that, you know, overdraft fees, payday loans, they've crept into society and people are getting further into debt. We are definitely nowhere near as good at savings as our parents were, you know, further generations behind. So we need to address it now because it is only going to get worse if we carry on.
Mm. And so, as you mentioned at the top there, you are interacting with employers and putting it down as sort of one of the perks of the job or one of the sort of HR well-being benefits. How is that going in terms of the recruitment of the companies here in Ireland? Who's buying into it so far? And do you have a particular number of hopefuls that you're hoping to address before the end of the year?
So we're generally going for enterprise level clients with over 250 employees, but the early adopters have been gyms, security companies, a PR company, our PR company, Beach Hut, and you know, but we're speaking with banks, accountancy firms, manufacturers, you know, food manufacturers, that type of thing. There's more benefit to the business in this world of, you know, where they have shift work environment where maybe the staff turnover is higher. But I don't know of anybody that I've ever mentioned this concept to that can't think of a time when this would have been useful to them.
Mm. And in terms of the business itself here, so it's Waitroom Ireland. So you are based here. Whereabouts are you based? How many people are working for you and so on?
So in Ireland, we are based out of the WeWork in the North Docks there next to the Central Bank. At the moment, it's just myself in Ireland and I've got all the support in the UK. Okay. So at the moment, I've got all of customer support, partner success in the UK and marketing there. We are looking to build out the team. We literally just, we're looking for business development managers. You know, just last week, we started looking for that.
And that's incredible then. So it's just you here in Ireland.
Just little old me. Yeah,
no,
it's
pressure.
Just little me at the moment. But the good thing is I've been able to learn what's worked and what hasn't worked in the UK. I go over there every fortnight just so they don't forget me. And it works really well. We don't need a big team in this. We've got the tech all in-house. The tech's already done for me. So it's been really handy that I've just been given a product that people like that is actually really necessary in today's environment.
So you mentioned there about the Walmart being paid fortnightly, and very often here in Ireland we're paid monthly. What do you make of that payment cycle?
Well, I actually think that the monthly pay cycle was probably fit for purpose 30 years ago, and now it's a bit outdated. And this isn't just me making up a stat here, but I remember my dad used to get his pay in, you know, a paper check, which we've all probably forgotten what they look like now. But that check used to come in the post. And then on that Sunday that he got paid, he used to sit there and he had all of his bills and he used to write out a check for every single one of those. So he had one income and then all of his outgoings went out on the same day. But if you fast forward to today and look at my bank account, I've got about 15 to 20 direct debits coming out of different days of the month that didn't even exist 30 years ago. The likes of, you know, Sky TV, broadband, mobile phones, LinkedIn Premium, Spotify. These things did not exist, and we've just managed to find ways of extracting money from employees around the UK and Ireland at different times of the month with only one income. So I just don't think that one in 20 times out, works compared to it did, 30 years ago.
And so being able to schedule it in, so if it is that you're like, I think I've calculated about €120 of my money every month goes out to just digital subscriptions. So the likes of Netflix, YouTube Premium, Spotify, all the stuff that I could totally live without, but it's €120. And for that to all go in one big wallop it's a big chunk of money. So would you envisage that we do that thing of looking ahead, maybe dipping out of our next month's salary to try and clear that so that it's not just constantly coming out of our debit account?
Well, it's just the fact that it's 20 outgoings and one ingoing. And we just think that you should now have the flexibility to pay yourself whenever you want to manage that. In essence, are we going to change that habit? Probably not. You will probably get more direct debits coming out of your bank account. But hopefully with the likes of WageStream, you'll actually be able to plan better around it. All of our future kind of tech work is around open banking, being able to see to see what direct debit's coming out at what time, and maybe being able to give you the heads up saying, hey, just so you know, you're about to drop into your overdraft. You've got €150 in your WageStream account. Do you want to stream some of them so you don't take some charges from the bank?
Adam Hankin, General Manager at WageStream Ireland, thank you for joining me. And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com or subscribe to the podcast on the News Talk app in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. John Fardy's next here on News Talk. I'll chat to you next week.